Hey everyone, and welcome to Retro Reminisce, the podcast that basks in the golden age of gaming by delivering a weekly dose of old school nostalgia. This is episode 21, and this week we'll be talking about Fighting Force for the Sony PlayStation, the Nintendo 64, and the PC. This is a beat-em-up with quite a history surrounding it, so we'll be discussing its legacy and how well it holds up 17 years later. We'll also give you some current pricing trends in case you would like to check this out for yourself. Before we get started, don't forget to head on over to thegamingoutsider.com and check out our video game podcast, our articles, our subscribe links, and our social media links as well. Feedback is greatly appreciated, so use our email links to let us know how we're doing. Also, subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, and more. Last week, we released episode 20, and that was all about Booger Man for the SNES and the Genesis, so check that out if you have not. I'm your host, Josh Faulkner. I'm here with my co-host, Justin Wilson. Justin, how are you doing this week, man?
Oh, not too bad. I just watched Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh, how's that? I've heard that's a good movie.
Pretty good movie. I recommend it. I rather enjoyed it.
Yeah, but this is a big time for movies right now. I mean, there's like a bunch of them I want to see. And when you have a toddler, it's really hard to go to the movies.
Oh, yeah.
You get babysitters and all that, and it's rough. But The Arrival just came out this week, and that's supposed to be amazing. And that Hacksaw Ridge movie that Mel Gibson directed, the new war flick.
Yeah,
That looks super good. And I haven't seen Doctor Strange yet. So, yeah, I actually bargained with my wife. She's going to go out with some friends to some bars this weekend, and she's going to watch the kid for me so I can go see a couple of these movies. So that's what we're going to do this weekend. So should be fun. So, hey, man, this presidential election.
Ooh. it got crazy, didn't it? There was like riots and stuff.
Yeah. Well, not quite riots, just a lot. This is the second night in a row they've been protesting. So,
man,
it's been pretty intense. And, you know, I don't want to turn into a big discussion about politics here. Definitely don't want to alienate anyone's beliefs or anything, but I can say that I'm definitely not a supporter of Trump. But at the same time, that's who we got. So, you know, we just got to kind of hope for the best. And, you know, if there's anything fishy going on, you know, we got to use our voices to voice our concerns. So we'll just have to see how it goes. And I hope everyone out there is doing okay with this whole decision. And, I know people are scared, and that kind of sucks, but, I mean, we'll get through it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It'll be all right, so hopefully, you know, maybe he'll be a good president. Who knows?
Yeah, see, all I got to say is I hope to God he's not bad. I hope he proves everyone wrong, and he comes out, and he's the greatest president we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I really hope that, but, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I like hopefully, to think that maybe he was using all the hatefulness and the nastiness during his campaign just to get people to vote for him. And then he kind of is like a butterfly coming out of his cocoon, and he's some awesome president, you know, but
that'd be sweet.
I'm not expecting that at all, but you know, that could happen. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not overly neither, but I hope so.
Yeah.
You know.
We'll see how it goes, man.
But anyway,
yeah, let's not go too much into politics. I just kind of wanted to mention that, you know, a lot of people are talking about it. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
Now, this is actually a pretty big one for me. This is Fighting Force. This game came out on the PlayStation in October of 1997, and it came out in April of 1999, 2 years later, on the N64 and the PC as well. This was developed by Core Design, and it was published by Eidos. It's a brawler or beat-em-up, however you want to consider, you know, or call that genre. This is actually one of my favorite genres growing up as a kid. I would always play these beat-em-up games. You know, you got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and The Simpsons and Streets of Rage, which is one of my all-time favorite game series. And I just love games where you just beat the shit out of people, you know, on the streets. And, you know, and these games were always so much fun to me, even though they're very repetitive. But there's always some kind of element to these games that make them worth experiencing and playing. And it's just a genre I've always really cared for. Fighting Force is actually a game that I personally liked a lot as a kid. And I thought it would be fun to revisit this to see how it is today. I still own a copy of it, And, you know, I have not played it since I played it when I was a kid. So I'm very curious to see how it aged. So this is actually kind of rare because Justin and I actually sat down and played this game together over the weekend. Normally with these games, we'll just kind of pick a game. We'll play it separately on our own. We'll take our own notes and then we come together and talk about it. But this is a game that's a lot of the enjoyment is to play it with other players because it's a two-player game. And just like any other beat 'em up, you know, you want to play with other people. So I hauled over all my stuff. I brought over my PlayStation copy, and we had an N64 copy as well. And we sat down, and we did not only play through the PlayStation version, but we played through the whole N64 version as well, co-op. So that was a nice breath of fresh air, and we got to take all of our notes while we were playing it and everything. So we'll get into talking about this now. All right, so Justin, let's talk about the gameplay here a little bit and what this game is exactly. Can you go into a little detail about how Fighting Force plays?
Yeah, it's a beat 'em up with at least towards the beginning, you're in these really smaller kind of levels where you really can't go much of anywhere. It's a beat 'em up with, and you're fighting against these guys with really, really goofy names like I can't even remember, like Punk was one of them.
Yeah, and Swag.
Slag.
All kinds of, you know, they're like 90s, like, I'm cool name, you know.
Slammer.
Yeah, stuff like that. And then all the females in the games actually just have normal names. They'll be like Spike and Stretch, and then the females are like Cindy. Yeah, it's like for some reason all the females in this game just have normal names, but all the dudes just have like funky, like trying to be cool names. It's kind of funny.
But the controls are a little janky. Like, you have I guess you'd call it your long attack and your short attack, which is kick and punch.
Yeah.
And then you have a grab move you can do. And the grab move you can change whether or not you press kick or punch after you grab them. And the walking is really bad in this one. I wasn't a big fan of the walk. Like, it felt like you were kind of, at least on the PlayStation version, mm-hmm. It felt like you were running in circles, literally. Like, you know, if you beat up a bad guy and an item falls on the ground, which you pick up for either health, or it could be a weapon, or it could be just for points, which we'll get into later. Yeah. And if there's one on the ground, you feel like you run in circles around it a lot. There's no way to kind of like cut forward a little bit and then double back to kind of, you know, make an oval to double back easier to grab it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of an issue I had a lot with that. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
At least on the...
When we first started playing, you know, I was moving and I noticed I was very slow. And you're used to moving within these games on a 2D plane, especially the ones that we've been playing lately for this show when it comes to beat 'em ups. And I kept trying to double tap like the D-pad on it. Now the game does have analog control if you have a DualShock, but it wasn't implemented very well because this was a very early game before the DualShock came out. So it supports it, but it doesn't support it very well. So you're best to use the D-pad. But I kept trying to double tap left or right to run, and you can't. You have to actually hold I think it's R1 in order to run. So you have to like hit that a lot, and it does kind of throw you off at first. The movement does feel very strange, and it's really hard to aim your attacks in this game, and combos can miss a lot, and just directing your attacks can be very difficult.
And I noticed you couldn't really combo moves together like at all. Like if you wanted to throw a kick in the middle of your punches because, you know, you're punching him and he's backing up because he's blocking, there's going to be a large delay in between the kick and the punch.
Yeah.
And then not to mention, I noticed that enemies can block, but I'm not really one to use a block button in these types of games.
Yeah.
I'm just running gun, but I didn't notice a block button when I was playing. So I felt like that was kind of cheap that they could block and we couldn't.
Yeah. So what Justin's talking about here is, in a lot of like games like this, especially modern ones, you know, you can hit, punch, 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 and do like a three hit punch combo, or you can hit kick, 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 and you'll do like a three kick, you know, combo. Well, most games you can mix those up together, so you can do like a punch, punch, kick, or a kick, punch, kick, or something like that. In this game, you can't do that. It's only all punches or all kicks in the combos. So a lot of the times I'm trying to mix them up like it's a modern game, and it's throwing off my combos, and I'm just attacking slowly, and then the enemies are hitting more. And then, yeah, like they can block sometimes, and you can sit there and keep punching them, and I notice that they won't unblock until you either grab them or change it up. So if you're punching them while they're blocking, you have to start kicking them or grabbing them or whatever, and then they will start freeing up their attacks. You can hit them more. And there's also moments in this game where there's a lot of objects that you can pick up too. Just like any other beat 'em up game, you can hit objects or or whatever, and sometimes weapons will drop and you can pick them up and use them. It in the PlayStation version, if you're trying to pick up a weapon and there's a guy near you attacking you, you literally cannot attack him while you're trying to pick up the weapon, and there's no like disconnect there. So you basically have to stop and walk away from the weapon, take the guy out, then walk back up and pick it up, because it's just they just don't want you to really interact with you. You can't do two things at a time, more or less. You can't pick it up real quick and attack, or that you can't just, you know, attack them and then pick it up like in the middle of an animation or anything. It's really hard to pick up items in this game, sometimes I noticed.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I did have to say the N64 version had much smoother walking, it felt like.
Yeah.
So just a heads up there.
Yeah, and we'll get in some more of that here soon too. There's actually quite a bit of differences between the two, but this game, the story is very strange because there's really no story to it at all. When you boot the game up, there's no introductory cutscenes. There's nothing like that. It doesn't give you any kind of text or dialogue or anything to kind of give you background of the story of this and what these four characters are doing or anything. It's just, they throw you in and you just start attacking. Even Streets of Rage and games that were much older than this, that were much more less advanced, you know, they were all giving narrative in some shape or form. This game doesn't. There is one moment like after like the second or third level where you're in an office building and you do see a glimpse of the final boss like running away and jumping into a helicopter. And that's really the only cutscenes you get until towards the end of the game, where they just kind of show these random locations and they don't give any context to them at all. It's really weird. And if you read the booklet to the game, it'll give you the backstory, but reading it, it was so much nonsense and none of it really made any sense at all that I didn't even think it was worth mentioning in this podcast. Like, I didn't even want to try to make sense of this stupid story and it's convoluted and it's just not good. So if you care about narrative in your game at all, or you need some kind of context of why you're doing the things you're doing, this game will drive you nuts because it really doesn't do that at all. There's also four characters in this game, and with most beat 'em ups, you know, you have your typical, like, you know, your normal guy with like a, you know, a white t-shirt and like jeans on or whatever, and like a bandana around his head. You always have like your overly buff guy. There's always a female character, and then there's always a wild card character too that's just somewhat more unique than the others. This game is definitely the same way. So you have your guy that has like his little ripped up like jean jacket on and like his jeans. That's Hawk. You have Mace, who's a female, who's kind of like the sexy character. You have Smasher, who is the guy who is like the big overpowered, slow, but like tank dude. And then you have a girl named Elena as well, and she's the wild card character, but she's not really much of a wild card character because she's a lot like Mace, except she's just like a teenager. But it's really hard to know she's a teenager unless you read the backstory stuff, which is stupid. So the Mace and the Elena characters feel very similar. They control very similar, and other than, you know, just their looks that are separate, they each have a different special attack. So the special attacks are you hit your two attack buttons together, and then you'll pull off this special attack that can kind of do crowd control a bit, but it takes some of your health out as well, which is also typical with this system. So did you have a favorite character at all?
Honestly, I liked the Ryu ripoff. Hawk,
yeah.
Was it? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was pretty much a Ryu ripoff. He had the tornado kick that Ryu does. The overall style of him, the open shirt, the hair, just so reminded me of that typical character. He wasn't, I played the tank and he was way too slow. I can't stand slow characters. Mace wasn't too bad neither. I was a fan of her for the speed. She seemed to be able to run around a lot more. Mm-hmm. But that can be a problem later on in the boss battles, which we'll talk about a little later.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Smasher is who I kind of played through the most, and normally I don't like to play as the big tanky dudes. I like more agile, kind of faster characters, but I just kind of got stuck with him because we started progressing through the game more, and I just happened to pick him just to test him out. So I was kind of stuck with him because we were just doing better at that time, and we were making all the way through the game, and so I played him a lot, and he does have some interesting attacks. I do like his little roll, but in this game, if you hit your opponent, not your opponent, I'm sorry, your teammate, you know, the second player, you'll actually do damage to them. So there is like, I guess you'd call friendly fire, you know, this version of friendly fire where you can hit and punch each other. So a lot of the times that roll attack that he does is very effective, but it'll hit other people and on your, you know, the other players that you're playing with, and it could hurt them as well. And it just kind of, it kind of goes off into its own thing, like with the aiming. It could actually hurt your teammate more than it can anything. So
no, getting into the hurting of teammates, also the jump attacks and the slide attacks in this game are almost useless in two-player mode. They're very difficult to aim on both versions, I thought. And they just didn't... don't get me wrong, they're nice for crowd control, especially if, you know, they're three bad guys are lined up. It's easy to take them all out with one kick.
Yeah.
But it just feels like the kicks didn't even really connect. You're not going to hit all three. You might hit one, maybe you might knock down two. But it's just, I almost felt like it's more of a not. Weapons in this game seem to be the go-to for getting through.
The one thing that this game does is kind of interesting is that they let you break off into segments where you can kind of choose where you want to go. And this kind of reminds me of Virtua Cop, like on the Sega Saturn and stuff. Once you beat a level, there's a moment in the game where they let you select where you want to go next. So it's like, hey, you head to the left and you'll go to the air base. And if you go to the right, you'll go to the naval base. So they give you options as to how you're going to progress through the game. And that can actually kind of change up how the game plays out a little bit. So even though this game is super short, you can beat it in probably, I don't know, what did you say, like an hour, hour and a half we beat this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And we played through two of them. And yeah, I'd say it's probably around right around an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but there is a level of replay value to this game, though. As you progress through the level, you actually have to make choices on whether you go to. So one example is the naval base or the air base. And so there's a little bit of replay value there because you might see a new area, new challenges, provided the game is a little repetitive. But the different areas, it didn't seem like you got the same amount of bad guys. So one area might be a little harder. And then there's also things around that can heal you. So it keeps pretty fresh with that.
And so let's talk about the enemies for a second, because this game pretty much throws out some very generic enemies at you. None of them are very interesting at all. It's mainly just street looking dudes, you know, that come after you. Some dudes have like wife beaters on. Some of them have, you know, just no shirts at all and just like jeans. And then, you know, like they all just kind of look the same. But when you first start out, you're getting attacked by like dudes in suits and stuff, and which is kind of odd. And then they start throwing like these guys that look like they look like mailmen at you, or like rent-a-cops that you're beating up, and those are very strange too. But the game kind of takes on a more like Streets of Rage kind of approach as you progress through. But at the beginning, I just felt like I was fighting guys in suits and rent-a-cops. It was really weird.
Yeah, the what I didn't like was that the character models were the exact same.
Yeah.
So like you'd face an enemy that's a big tank, just like oh my gosh, what was
Smasher.
His name? Hold on. Smasher, yeah. So, you know, and he's the exact same size as Smasher. And then the guys in suits, they're the exact same size as Hawk. So there's not really any variation at all.
Yeah, you repeat a lot of enemies throughout the game too. So it's even though like there's different themed levels, you'll just start seeing like the rent-a-cop guys coming back in the middle of like a warehouse or something, you know, or a naval base or whatever. And it kind of gets weird. I mean, they do introduce new enemies as the game progresses through, but then you have old ones just kind of coming back, and it just feels very repetitive at times.
I hated the purple guys. I can't even remember their name. Yeah. I'm not even going to try.
They have multiple names. Yeah, they're like these alien dudes that just kind of show up all of a sudden. They're like purple guys.
Or government experiments, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. And they were like in tubes. And one of them, like the first time we saw one, he was hanging out in a tube and he was purple. And we're like, what the hell is this thing? And we walked to him and we beat the shit out of him before he even got out of the tube. And he was no threat to us at all.
Now, in the PlayStation version, that guy seemed to... not the PlayStation, the 64 version, he healed. I know he healed.
Yeah.
I watched his health bar go up, and I was very mad about it. But we flew through him in the PlayStation version. Like, we didn't even give him a chance. They were just dead.
Yeah, they weren't much of a fight at all.
I'm not sure if they heal or not, but I can tell you they were a lot easier to beat in that version.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of bosses in this game, too, and let's go into them. The biggest thing I have about the bosses is this, and in this game, is most of them didn't feel like bosses.
No,
they just felt like just another guy that was just kind of walking out, and you just beat him up and go. And most of the bosses, I can't recall any boss that had like the subordinate guys kind of walking around that you had to fight as well. And we usually beat 'em up games, they always throw normal enemies in with the bosses as well. You have to kind of juggle between them. This game begins to kind of segregate the bosses off on their own thing.
Now, disclaimer, we did play on easy and medium only.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We don't know. This could, you know, you could play on hard and it could be a real challenge. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, yeah. But from what we saw, that's not the case at all.
It's just a
boss. And most of the time, they just seem like normal enemies. You know, there's not a lot of bossiness to them, I guess you could say. Now, there's one guy we fought that was in an airbase and he had a jetpack. And oh my god, I remember when we had a hell of a time with this boss because the camera kept rotating on us. Every time he would move and we would try to walk around him to fight, the camera would just start rotating like clockwise and we couldn't get it to stop.
We almost had to take a break because I was getting motion sick from it.
Yeah.
And so just another warning for that, for this game there. And it was because like one of us would start running in one direction and then the other person would just barely touch the joystick in the opposite direction. So you're running in reverse circles and it just makes the camera freak out. And there's not much you can do to fix it. You're not really getting hit because you're moving and the bad guys really are bad at hitting moving targets, but it's still very, very frustrating and adds, you know, a level of hardness that really shouldn't be in a game.
Yeah. And it's more of those, like those arena kind of stages where bosses are at. There's a few bosses we fought that were just kind of in smaller rooms and the camera doesn't really do that, but these bosses usually have like gimmicks to them. Like they have like missiles or a jetpack or something like that. And there was at least two of them that I can recall where the camera would just freak out while we're trying to fight them, and that made it much more frustrating to play. And that's not the only time the camera freaks out. I remember right when we first started playing the PlayStation version, we got to a point where all the enemies were behind a wall and we were trying to go back there and fight them, and the camera just started panning up closer to the wall and we couldn't even see the enemies or ourselves, and we were just kind of fighting in the dark, more or less just hoping for the best, and we could not get that camera to pan back and kind of center itself in the action or make that wall disappear or anything. That was really frustrating too.
Now, how weird was the final boss? Like that guy, it threw me through a loop because you throw all the whole game, every boss you come across, you beat him up.
Yeah.
And the final boss, you don't beat him up. You throw barrels at him.
Yeah.
So
we couldn't figure it out at first. Like we kept hitting him and it wasn't doing anything. We're like, this is a beat him up. How do we not beat this guy up? This doesn't make any sense. And there's red barrels sitting around everywhere. And this is the only video game I've played where red barrels do not explode. And
I was very mad. There wooden crates explode, hot dog stands explode, tables and chairs. Well, I think some of the chairs exploded, but not the tables.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's not the point. The point is red barrels of all things. If you're going to have a wooden crate explode, you should have red barrels explode, especially when you only put like four in a sea of gray barrels. Like why distinguish color if you're not going to, I'm sorry, I'm just ranting at this point.
It's funny because we pointed that out because that we saw like four gray barrels and there's one red barrel sitting in the center. We're like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to grab this red barrel. I'm going to throw and blow all these dudes up. No, it's just like, bonk, and it just hit the floor. That was it. So, but yeah, this final boss, you just throw shit at him and he dies and he's really easy. And, it wasn't much of a fight at all. And then like
it wasn't too hard to aim neither when you're fighting him, like throwing the barrels. It was hard to aim like when you're throwing the gun or if you're holding on to a weapon and you throw your weapon. Those were kind of hard to aim, but the barrels were pretty bulky and the bad guy really didn't move around too much for having a jetpack.
Once you kill the boss, there's like a newspaper like headline pops up on the screen that you read. And then there's like a slight small cutscene, and then the game just ends. And we it just ends abruptly. And there's a bunch of loading screens in this game too. That's one thing we didn't mention. This game's always loading something. And every time you load up a level, you know, you're sitting there for probably a minute waiting for the thing to load up. And then sometimes it's very rare that you get a cutscene in this game. And again, the cutscenes have no context and they're very short.
Like there was that one cutscene where it was just the main villain guy that you're supposed to fight. Uh-huh. And he's sitting at a chair and he turns around and he just laughs. And then that's the end of the cutscene. That's
yeah.
all.
Yeah. So you're waiting for like a whole minute to load this cutscene. He comes up, he laughs, and then you're waiting for another minute at a load screen to load up the next level, and it's just like, oh my god, guys, come on, seriously?
Like, there's zero context here for why he's even the story's bad.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much of a story here. It's like, whoever came up with the story of this thing was high. Like, they were definitely high. You can look at the manual and read and I'm saying story in air quotes here. They were definitely on something when they wrote that story. It makes no sense at all.
Now, something else this game really didn't have going for it. I forgot to mention when we were talking about maps earlier. I got stuck in one part of the map and had to have Josh kill me, and we had to waste our only continue that we slaved over
yes.
to earn.
I'm glad you said that, the continue system. So this game is very odd because you have continue. So most beat-em-up games usually have lives. They'll give you two or three lives. So if you die, you just use a life and you'll come right back up and respawn and continue where you left off. This game has continues just like that, but they don't give you any when you start. You have nothing. So if you die early on in the game, it's just game over. That's it. Now, you earn extra lives or continues, as they call them in this game, by earning a lot of points and just basically earning them that way. So you have to get a high score in order to get them. And I'm not really quite sure what the threshold is you have to hit in order to get one, but we didn't get an extra life until well through halfway through the game. And then we just started earning them all of a sudden. I think we got maybe two the whole time. And then, if you die, then you just come right back up and start where you left off. But yeah.
No, that's the PlayStation version. The N64 version, you actually, each person got three lives.
Yeah, they started out with lives, which is, you know, makes a lot more sense. That PlayStation version is like you go through well more than half of the game without even getting a single continue because you don't have enough points to earn them. And then towards the end of the game, we just started getting them, and it was really weird. So if you have trouble playing this game from the start, if you play on a higher difficulty, once you die, you're done, and it's hard to earn these continues. Like, that's just a horrible design decision. I don't know why they did that. So let's talk about the graphics a little bit in this game. The game definitely was strange looking. especially with the PlayStation version. Like, the art design's kind of funky. Like, none of the characters are really designed that well. A lot of the polygons seem to kind of float off each other and clip through each other. That looks really strange. The game's textured okay. Some of the things look pretty good. Other environments do not look good at all. A lot of the polygons and the textures here just seem to want to break and overlap each other a lot when you're playing, I noticed. And I
remembered we were talking about, or I made sure to point it out, we were looking at some text and we couldn't read it. And I was like, I can't even make out what that says. And it was something that was more in the foreground of where we were, more in the play area or the sandbox, if you will.
Yeah.
And then I was looking in the background, and there's a sign on a building in the background that you could read clear as day. So it's really hit or miss with the graphics on this one in many, many spots.
Yeah, and there's moments in the game where like there's a train level that you go on, and once you go into like the next car of the train, like the game has trouble loading the textures up, and it's like you'll just kind of get like this black abyss, and then all of a sudden everything just pops up in front of you, and it's really really odd. And then the train level also has like this this sort of graphical effect where they kind of like blink a little bit to try to give it the effect that the train's going through a tunnel and the lights are blinking, and it didn't feel like that way at all. And I could definitely see this giving someone a seizure because it hurt my eyes. I was like rubbing my eyes. I'm like, what is this going on here?
That was another major difference between the two. The N64 version didn't seem to – they seemed to fix that issue. It didn't really give me a bad headache. It honestly really barely even noticed the lights blinking as compared to the the PlayStation version, which seemed to light up the whole room and then make it all dark really fast.
Yeah, they used some kind of texture filter that when it blinked, it wasn't making the screen go dark. It was just kind of like making the colors change a bit, like go darker. And it didn't hurt your eyes, and it wasn't like jarring at all. It was just it seemed more natural in that version too. So they definitely fixed that with the PlayStation version. I don't know what was going on in that train level.
Yeah,
that was definitely strange. One thing this game does that I really did not like either is that there's no directional arrows. A lot of beat 'em up games, they have that arrow that pops up once you clear the enemies out. They're like, hey, go this way. You know, now this game's 3D, so you can move up, down, left, right, wherever you want. But there's a lot of times where we cleared out enemies and we're just wandering around like, where the hell am I supposed to go? It would have been nice if they would have had that bonk, bonk, bonk arrow kind of pop up like most of these games do. That kind of points you in the right direction.
And then early on, they let you know that you have to break down walls by kicking them. So you could be in a completely closed in area and have no idea where to go, no bad guys coming, and you just have to run around and kick walls. At the beginning, it's obvious. It's a gate, and then it moves to like a door that you kick down, and then to like a barrier. But later on, it's just you're just straight kicking through a wall.
Yeah, like, yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense. Yeah, and then there's one section where you have to hit this train. You have to go inside. It's one of the moments in the game where they let you choose where you want to go. So you can go to the left into one train and you go to one area, and you go to the right into another train, you go to another area. Well, if you don't go there fast enough, the train will actually leave. And then you're just standing there like, what do I do now? And you have to wait like a couple minutes before the train will actually come back and let you go in progress. The N64 version, they fixed that, and this train stayed stationary the whole time. But yeah, the PlayStation version, they would just take off if you waited too long. And at first, we were trying to figure out like if we even need to go to the trains, because they didn't give any indication. Like, we were still waiting for more enemies to come run up. And we actually missed that train. We had to stand there for a while until it came back. I thought that was really weird, too. Yeah, so definitely a strange game at times. So let's talk about the difficulty. Do you think the game was hard at all? Do you think it was too easy? Like, I mean, we played around with a couple of the difficulties too. How do you feel?
It was pretty easy, and it had its spots where it was hard, but like I said earlier, for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Like the camera spins. The gun auto-aimed when you picked up a gun, which would only have like 3 or 4 bullets in it max. It was hard for all the wrong reasons is all I really got to say about the difficulty. Like, okay, especially when you got knocked down, like you'd get knocked down or they'd get knocked down, the enemies. And if you didn't jump on them right away and kick them while they're down, you had to wait for the animation for them to stand up. But when you go down, it seems like they're just standing around you and beating the ever living piss out of you.
Yeah.
Like bad for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Hard for the wrong reasons. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree. And if you play that easy difficulty, you definitely will breeze through this game faster than you on any other difficulty. And the game is definitely harder because they don't give you any lives. And I remember as a kid, I didn't really have any trouble playing through this game. I played through it multiple times by myself, and you know, I don't remember ever having an issue. But the systems they have in place don't really make a lot of sense, and that can actually work against the difficulty at times. So while it's not necessarily a very difficult game, there's some elements in this game that can make it a little less enjoyable for you in the difficulty department. So I can see why people dislike this game. There's a lot of people that really dislike this game. But yeah, that makes sense to me, that kind of turns people off. The difficulty is just kind of in the medium, I would say, for the most part.
It was definitely fun though. Like, as far as a 2-player beat 'em up game, it was really nice sitting on the couch and playing. And it's a quick game, like we said, an hour and a half. So I mean, it's not too bad. I'd also give it a medium rating.
Yeah. So how do you feel it held up today? I mean, I play a lot of beat 'em up still. I mean, stuff like Streets of Rage and Turtles in Time and fighting. Super Nintendo one, Final Fight, you know, like stuff like that still feels really good today to play. Does this game still feel good to you today to play, or does it age horribly?
I'd say age somewhere in the middle. I really, really enjoyed playing parts of it, and then there's other elements of the game where I just wanted to turn it off.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The cleaned up version, the N64 version, I liked. The PlayStation version, I did not.
Yeah. Now, I liked this game a lot as a kid, and I was excited to play this again. And sitting down and playing it with Justin this weekend, I kind of changed my mind on that. Like, when we started playing that PlayStation version, I'm like, wow, this game is rough. Like, I don't remember this being that bad. And I noticed as we progressed further through the game, we were kind of enjoying it more. It definitely gives a very bad impression at first. But it's still a fairly decent beat-em-up game. Definitely not as good as I remembered it. It's got a lot of technical issues, frame rate issues, graphic issues. The controls are rigid. The music's just god-awful boring. Doesn't really fit it very well. It can be very hard to aim attacks and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's a fairly enjoyable beat-em-up, and definitely one I don't remember quite as fondly as I did when I was a kid. Now, like we were talking about before, there is an N64 version of this game that came out 2 years later, as well as a PC version. We didn't really have access to the PC version, so we couldn't really play that for this review. But the N64 version is probably the one that I played as a kid, because this, wow, we played through the entire PlayStation version, and we were kind of iffy on the game. And then we started playing the N64 version, and we're like, wow, this is actually a pretty nice improvement. So one thing you guys will notice is the graphics in the N64 are much smoother. Like, the textures don't break as much. The polygons stay constructed. It looks much cleaner.
Yeah, the colors didn't seem like... The colors on the PlayStation version just kind of seemed to run together, and they're all muddy, and and there was, you lost a lot of detail with it for some reason. But the N64 version, it looked, felt, and just played all around better.
Yeah, the music was more upbeat in the N64 version, too. I noticed that right off the bat. It was just like there was more punchy, more bass to the songs and everything. And even though the music still wasn't that great, it definitely fit better than the PlayStation version. The intro levels have names to them now, and they actually have like sub levels and stuff too, so you can kind of tell where you're at in the game, which is nice. And before, they just load up a next level, and they don't really give you any indication.
And there was no loading problems really. No. Too much with N64.
Yeah, we didn't really have any loading screens or anything. It just smoothly transitioned. There's on-screen indicators when attacking on the enemies too. Like, they'll have these green strikes that pop up when you hit enemies. That means that they're blocking, or if it's red, it means that they're actually getting hit. So you can actually determine by these on-screen indicators when the enemy is actually blocking or not, and that was helpful too. The enemies, when they die, they'll illuminate red. So if they're going to come back up, you'll actually know, because they will be still that normal, you know, shade of color. And when they're dying, they kind of turn this reddish color, and you know they're dead, and that helps too. The controls were much smoother, and it felt much better on the N64 controller. Do you agree with that too?
Oh yeah, definitely. That, like I was saying earlier, on the PlayStation version, it seemed like you're just running in running in circles, and you really can't like extend your circle out to make it an oval so you can like double back at a different angle. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of running in the same circle over and over again. Whereas on the N64 version, it felt like you could actually kick yourself out a little further to bring yourself in to pick up that item or to gather those points.
Yeah, and just the button placement was better too. It was easier to run.
Oh yeah,
because you can use the Z button back there. The button to pick them up and throw was easier. Punch and kick. Everything just felt like the buttons were placed easier, and the game was just much easier to play, surprisingly, on that N64 controller. There's a lot of more stats at the end of every stage. There's like a stage summary, and they give you like a point, like some points of how many enemies you attacked and stuff like that. The N64 version gives you more stats at the end of every stage, and there's also like a competitive kind of stat for both of the players playing too, to where they'll give you scores and how many enemies each player took out, for lack of a better term. And that way you can kind of use that as like friendly competition with your friend too. I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, especially since they didn't have the continue system in the PlayStation. There was no way to gain lives through points that I noticed.
Yeah, nope.
So the points is really more of a competitive thing. So it's nice that they added those stats, just because it's more obvious that it's more of just competitive friendliness.
Yeah, totally. The items disappear instead of blink when they go away in this version too. The boxes have different textures. There's live portraits instead of like those goofy earned continue systems. So you actually have at the bottom of the screen, you have these really horrible looking like stretch JPEG images of like the enemy's so heads. Bad. Yeah, but at least there's some kind of on-screen indication of how many lives you have left, as opposed to the PlayStation version, which had nothing like that. It was more convenient to do the A and Z button, like the combo attack on the N64 controller, just the way the buttons are. You don't have to like feel like you have to kind of arch your fingers and kind of play finger twister to tap those two buttons together to make that happen. So that was easier. I guess the cars didn't blow up in the N64 version. They just seemed to kind of stay stationary. The bosses spew rewards also, which is really cool. So every time you take out a boss, like all these extra items that you can pick up kind of spew out of him, which was pretty neat. And that didn't happen in the PlayStation version. They also
we did have in both of them, we had slight frame rate issues. The PlayStation way more than the N64, but when explosions happened. So the N64, I think there was only one, maybe two explosions that gave us a frame rate dip. But the N64, sorry, the PlayStation version, every single explosion, no matter how small, is really going to chug the game.
Yep. The names of all the characters, all the enemies, were different in the N64 version, too. Like, they changed all those up, and they were all kind of less lame, I noticed. some of the path options are blocked, too. Like, there's actual conditions to where they won't let you progress to some areas when they split off and let you choose. And I thought that was kind of interesting as well. I couldn't really figure out what those attributes were that, you know, forced you to go one way instead of another. So they kind of make it in some sort of way you can kind of ruin your chances of going to a different area when they pop up and give you a choice in the N64 version. So overall, the N64 version is definitely the way to go here, correct? I mean, you agree with that?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was just the better of the two for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the history of this game, because this game has actually quite a history to it. Core Design, they originally went to Sega, and they wanted to make this game a Sega Saturn exclusive, and they wanted to make this game Streets of Rage 4. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I love Streets of Rage. It's my favorite beat-em-up series of all time. The first two games are probably in my top 20 favorite games ever, with probably the second one being in my top 10. Love those games to death. Core Design wanted to make this Streets of Rage 4. We never got a Streets of Rage 4 yet, so this was originally supposed to be Streets of Rage 4. They were working with Sega on it. Sega was cool with it to have Core Design make it. And there was going to be, it was obviously going to be a Sega Saturn exclusive. Well, eventually, at some point in the development, Core Design wanted to port this game to other platforms. And Sega was like, well, hell no, that's our IP. You know, you guys got to make this for the Sega Saturn. And then they started to argue, and their relationship just sort of diminished from there. So Sega put a stop to this, and they canceled the development of it. They're like, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We're done. So Core Design took all the assets and everything from this game, and they essentially just continued to develop the game, but they just slapped a new name on it. And instead of putting it on the Saturn, they canceled their Saturn version, and they went straight to their competitor, the Sony PlayStation. So I thought that was very interesting. Now, they released it on the PlayStation, and then 2 years later went to the N64, and they obviously polished up the game, but they never released it on the Saturn, which is mainly a huge middle finger to Sega for not letting them make the Streets of Rage 4. So this game, if you're a Streets of Rage fan like me, you definitely want to play this game, because this is what was going to be Streets of Rage 4. Now, is it a good thing this didn't end up being Streets of Rage 4? Absolutely, because this game has nothing that makes Streets of Rage special. Streets of Rage felt like a gritty cop series. It felt like you were playing through some crime drama, you know, even though it was a beat 'em up. It had a great use of color, amazing art, just this awesome aesthetic to it that made it feel so appealing to roam the streets in this game. And it had a story that actually made sense, and it had like a cop drama like story, and there was drama and intrigue and stuff, and it was really cool. And the games had some of the most amazing composed songs out of video game history to me. This game, Fighting Force, had none of that.
None That's of a big that. Old Duke in comparison.
Yeah, it was none of that special. None of the special elements that made Streets of Rage so great, this game has none of that at all. It feels like a very shoddy ripoff of Streets of Rage. The environments don't feel like Streets of Rage. The story absolutely does not feel like Streets of Rage. Now, I'm not sure if this whole game was just the same Streets of Rage 4 with just a different name slapped on it, but I'm actually glad that this ended up not being Streets of Rage 4, because it would have been the black sheep of the series. It definitely would have put a blemish on that series. It would have tarnished it, its good name. So I think it's smart for Sega to cancel it and not have it associated with their IP. I think it's a good idea. All right, so let's talk about some current pricing trends in case anyone listening would like to check this out. PlayStation version, it's actually pretty common, $8 to $10 complete, not too bad. I think when I bought it, it was like $1.99 at like some retro game shop. So you can probably get it cheaper if you look well enough, but commonly $8-$10. The N64 version is actually a little more rare, so you're going to pay about $15 to $20 for the loose cartridge of that one, and it is called Fighting Force 64, not just Fighting Force, so be aware of that. If you get a box copy of it, it's $40 or $50, so a complete version is a little pricey on N64. PC version...
Could you imagine if there was 63 other versions of Fighting Force?
Oh, God.
Fighting Force 64.
Yeah, yeah. And I was the one who liked this game as a kid. I couldn't even bear that thought of that now. The PC version is it's very hard to find, just because old PC versions of games usually are. If you can find a loose disc somewhere, it's probably $5. Really easy, and I'm assuming the PC version is going to be the same as the N64 version because it came out the same time, so it should have that polish to it as well. If you can find like an actual box copy of the PC version, it's going to cost you about $30 because it's a little more rare, but that's just how PC games are nowadays. If you find full boxed, big box PC games, classic PC games, they're actually becoming more sought out with collectors, so they're going to be a little more, and this one's definitely one of those. The cool thing is that this game is on PSN, so you can get it on the PS3, the PlayStation Vita, and the PSP as one of the PlayStation 1 classics, and it's $5.99. Funny thing is that they actually have a sale going on right now, and you can get this game for $1.99 if you have PlayStation Plus. If you don't have PlayStation Plus, I think it's $2.50 or something. So this game's part of this sale, so I think it's kind of funny we did this episode, and here Sony popped it up on sale in their store this week. So if you're interested in playing this game and you like beat-em-ups, and even though we kind of hate it on a little bit, if you still want to check it out, that's a very inexpensive way to play it, and you can use a modern platform to play it. So definitely recommend doing that too. All right, so that'll be it for this episode of Retro Reminisce. Justin, thanks again for coming on this week and playing this game with me, man. It was fun revisiting this one, even though it definitely did not age as well as I would like.
Even if it didn't age well, it was still fun. And, you know, it's the main reason why I love doing this podcast is getting together and talking or playing. That even playing the games, sitting down, bringing down the old tube from the upstairs.
Yeah, our kids got to play together and stuff. You know, it was definitely not a regret, you know, revisiting this game, even though we didn't like it quite as much as I did when I was a kid. But, you know, some of these games don't age very well. And that's why I like this podcast, because I get to revisit them and see if they're really as good as I remember or not.
Right, right. And I get to sit down and play games with a good friend.
Indeed. All right, so tune in next week where we'll be revisiting something new for everyone. Head on over to thegamingoutsider.com for more and email us at feedback@thegamingoutsider.com if there's a game you would like for us to cover on this show, or just give us any general feedback at all. We hope to see you guys next time, and as we leave, I would like to remind you all once again to visit your local retro shop, grab a golden oldie, Game Mike's 1989. See you next time.
Bye.